Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. It is once again time for the monthly market update for the month we are currently in, which is October 2016. I'm here now with our resident expert, economist, and wealth advisor, Paul Sloat, founder of Green Drake Advisors based in Wayne, Pennsylvania. Every month, Paul joins us here on the show and fills us in on the economic forces at work in the national and global economy and what those forces might do to the local real estate investment markets in the short and long term. Since I know you're ready to hear Paul describe these economic conditions as they exist now in October 2016, we might as well move right into the episode. And welcome back to the show, Paul.
Well, thanks, Dan. It's my pleasure to be back.
So it's been a little while since we spoke last, and I'm sure we have a ton of information here for the listeners. So I'm just going to go ahead and turn the floor over to you.
Well, thanks, Dan. I appreciate it much. And we do have a lot of information to cover this month, and I'm going to try to get it all packed into half hour for our listeners so that it will be short and sweet for them to listen to it, whether they're in their car or in their office. So why don't we start with a few important macro events out there. So number one, we'll talk about interest rates. As we all know, I've been talking about interest rates, that they were going to start going up. And in fact, that's what has happened out there. Long-term rates have begun what I believe is a intermediate-term rise in the bond market. We'll talk about that in a minute. And more precisely, we expect the Federal Reserve to raise the short-term rates in December at its meeting in December. And then we expect more rate rises next year. The shape of this and speed at which the Fed raises rates is still a question for 2017. But I think as the year progresses, the probability that interest rate increases will become more frequent will increase significantly, especially as we exit 2017. And part of that is because we expect that inflation will pick up next year. The decrease in commodity prices is over. That means that the deflationary impact from those commodity price decreases will not be there anymore. So for the average listener, what that means is they can expect the prices at the pump aren't going to go down anymore and may in fact go up. And some of the decreases that they've seen in certain other things likely are over, at least on a short-term cyclical basis. So that coupled with what we see as increasing velocity for money should increase inflation with a lag. In addition, if we look at the underlying rate of inflation and exclude these sort of cyclical swing from commodities, that rate is north of 2%. So we could easily have 2% inflation sometime in the next 6 months. So as we said to our listeners before, we need to watch out for rising interest rates and what it may do to the valuations for real estate properties and the financing of those properties over time. Listeners should be aware of one other thing in relation to real estate. That is that lending standards have begun to tighten. So according to the Federal Reserve, its senior loan officer survey, lenders are beginning to tighten the screws on lending in the real estate business. This is because they see significant supply coming that will impact the ability of operators to raise rates on their individual renters. So we will discuss that a little bit later when we go through a couple of different classes of real estate and what we see coming down the pike. The other thing on the macro side of the equation is that employment growth has slowed down employment growth, which was running at over 2% year over year, is now running under 2%. In fact, it's been running about 1.7% year over year for the last 4 months. What does that mean? That means that demand for new space, such as office space, as well as hotel space, should slow down. And I would point out that for certain metropolitan areas, this is more of an issue than for others. Even within states, there is tremendous variation. So, for example, if we look at Texas, and that is one where we would expect an impact from the oil drop, but really the only city area where we've seen a drop in employment growth year over year has been Houston. Houston employment growth is running only up 0.4% year over year. But if we were to go to other places around the state, such as Dallas, Fort Worth, employment growth is running up 3.4%. And out in Austin, which is driven by technology and is a great city, employment growth is running up 4% year over year. So even within states, there is big variation. So while we talk about an overall slowdown in employment growth in the U.S., you have to be careful because this applies unevenly city to city, driven by the dynamics that are driving each city's economics. So it is something we should pay attention to, but we shouldn't use a broad brush stroke to paint every city in the U.S. And then we'll talk a little bit now. We're going to switch from some of these big macro things to what's going on in a couple of micro industries. So let's talk about office space first. A couple of interesting things with office space are going on out there. Firstly, office construction is up significantly year over year, according to the latest data from the Department of Commerce. Private office construction was up 28% year over year, which is a pretty hefty increase. And in fact, the amount of money being spent on office-based construction has now equaled the peak month in back in 2007-08 for office construction spending. So what we're going to see down the line in 2017 and 2018 is accelerating office space growth. So our listeners should be aware of that. And then the other thing that they should be aware of is that inventory square foot per office employee. So in other words, how much square footage each employee uses continues to fall and is at a new low in terms of usage for the United States. In addition, we have a couple of other interesting things to think about, which are out there. Number one is the movement of the millennials into the workforce. They're used to open environments and shared office space. And so that is a paradigm shift over time as they move into the employment arena. The other thing you should be aware of, which is a positive for office, is that as they move into the employment arena, the 25 to 54-year-old prime employment age group demographic is expected to grow through 2025. So for the next 10 years, we're going to have positive growth in that employment demographic, unlike the last 6 years, where until 2012-13, we saw declining employment demographic there. In other words, that demographic was shrinking as the baby boomers aged. But now the millennials moving into the workforce is swamping the baby boomers' retirement and will ensure growth for the next decade. So that's another thing to think about with office. So as we look forward, we would expect accelerating growth in office in terms of the amount of square footage that is coming out. And it is likely at some point when we have a recession in like 2018 or 2019 that this accelerating square footage growth will meet declining demand. It's hard for us to forecast right now when the next recession would be, but we're expecting one late decade as the Fed responds to inflation. So let's move on to another class of real estate. Let's talk about lodging. Lodging growth is accelerating in terms of square footage growth. So for our listeners, we'll give them a few statistics about supply in the hotel industry. So supply in the hotel industry, which rose significantly during the recession, fell off and only grew 0.4% in 2011 and 2012, and then inched up to 0.6% in 2013 and 0.7% in 2014. This allowed for average daily rate to rise pretty aggressively as capacity utilization increased. But starting in 2015, supply growth began to accelerate. So supply growth in 2015 was 1.1%. This year's expected to be 1.9% in 2016. And next year in 2017, it's expected to rise to 2.5%. RevPAR growth as a result is expected to slow from 8.2% in 2014 to 6.2% last year to only 2.9% this year in 2016. It is another industry that's highly cyclical, and what we have is supply accelerating into what we would call a looming recession later this decade, which is classic for the real estate business. So we would watch it with hotel, given that supply growth is now accelerating from a long-term perspective. And for those looking to buy hotel properties, there are probably better opportunities in the long term and maybe a downturn in a couple of years. So that's what we're seeing in those two areas. The apartment area, we have talked about the multifamily area having a lot of supply coming on. This supply has been coming on this year, and next year it will continue to come on. This supply is beginning to put pressure on rents. We've seen that in places like New York and San Francisco and Los Angeles, and you're also seeing pressure in a place like Houston where there is an issue due to employment growth. So overall, multifamily is an area we'd be careful with because of this supply coming. And as we've said, there's a long-term piece to this, which is the demographics of the millennials. Millennials are beginning to move into their prime years for buying housing. And as they do that, the percentage of millennials that owns homes will continue to rise, we expect, for the next decade. Please note that we have been positive on housing, and housing continues to do okay. Housing starts continue up year over year, and prices, according to Case-Shiller, continue to rise between 5 and 6% nationally. This is not a surprise given the demographics for housing. We would expect this positive housing environment to continue, and at least in the initial stages of the recovery in housing, be positive for the home builders as they are able to increased density per community. By this, we mean they're not significantly increasing the number of communities out of which they are selling properties, but what they are doing is increasing the number of homes per community that they are selling. This allows them to gain economies of scale and gives them some leverage. So we continue to see home building as pretty positive over the next decade, driven by the millennials. I mean, the other area that the demographics are building on nicely is for those who are investing in long-term care, because those facilities, such as assisted living, are seeing significant demand as the baby boomers age. So demographics is everything in real estate, coupled with the economy. The other thing that we should be aware of is that the government will be spending more money on basic infrastructure, and this should be good for overall economic growth. One of the things we have argued for the last 5 years is not only corporations, but the government has been underinvesting in the country. And in fact, the government continues to underinvest in the country because we know that government spending, the public sector spending, has been falling year over year. In fact, public non-residential construction fell almost 9% year over year in the latest data. This is continued massive underspending on investment in the country. We think as the government ramps up this investment spending driven by the populace getting feisty about this subject, that this is going to help economic growth over the long term. The reason this will help economic growth, which should be good for real estate, is that economic growth is a function of not only consumption and the business side of the equation, but also the investment side of the equation. And the investment side of the equation does a couple of things. Number one, it increases the capital stock in the United States over which we can earn a return for the economy. In addition, through investment into the economy, we drive productivity growth. Productivity, or the lack thereof, has been on the front page of every major newspaper that I have seen, whether it's the New York Times, the Washington Post, or the Wall Street Journal. What we can tell you is that productivity growth is directly related to investment. Now, this is statistically proven. So the fact that corporations and the U.S. government have massively underinvested in the country has led to poor productivity growth, and a pickup in investment will reverse this trend, which will allow the underlying economy to grow at a faster rate, which is, as we said, good for real estate. In addition, faster productivity growth will allow for real wages to rise at a faster pace, which is good for real estate. So all this investment that's going to come is good for real estate. Now, it will take some time to have an impact, and we would expect the real impact of this spending to be 2020 and later, but it is something that your listeners should keep an eye on, because it likely will have a positive impact on the overall real estate business. Those are the only pieces I have for today. As you know, I covered quite a bit of ground. Dan, do you have some follow-up questions on the various pieces?
So you had mentioned the office space. I do, actually, and that was a lot of great information, Paul. I got a couple pages of notes here. I couldn't imagine listening to this in my automobile, in my car, and getting the same level of effectiveness out of it. So much great stuff here. You had mentioned the office space construction going up 28%, and I have not followed that statistic, but it seems to me that that's like an alarmingly large number of increase there. And then at the same time, you mentioned that the space inventory per employee is down to a new low. Do you happen to know what that new low is and maybe what it was down from, so we could get a grasp? This is like the space is increasing on the number of square footage, and then the amount of demand per employee is also going down. So to me, that seems like we have two things going in the wrong direction, and maybe, you know, indicative of an overbuild coming on the horizon, which is kind of what you were getting at, I believe.
Right, because what will happen, this is, you know, it's intuitive, is that when we get into recession, what happens is we have fewer employees, so the square footage rises. But what I look at is the square footage per employee cycle over cycle. So if we were to look at, you know, square footage per employee, it is probably down 4 to 5% from the last trough in 2007, 2008. And I think that's the meaningful number, Dan, is that percentage change. So we could have, in other words, 5% more employees, but not need any more space. Does that make sense?
It does. And ironically, we're looking for some new office space in the city of Philadelphia for our company now. And we're checking out some of these kind of co-working spaces along with some other spaces that would be all our own. And a lot of my partners are millennials of that age. And I feel like I'm kind of the senior guy. And I'm like, no, we want to get our own office and we don't need to share space with anybody. But a lot of the people that are on the team here at Diamond Equity are millennials, and it's been ironic. I'm sitting here listening to you share how these people, these millennials, the younger generation likes the open / you know, shared office space, and it's kind of eye-opening to me. I'd prefer to kind of have my own office, my own space, and be distraction-free, but it's a bit of a revelation to hear you share that and say, oh, okay, maybe this is why everybody's pushing to check out these co-working spaces as we're looking for offices.
Partly it's demographics. The millennials have a very different view of things, and even companies that are being established in their own space typically have a lot of open space and have what we would call offices that can be reserved for use for private conversations. So it's people aren't even being assigned permanent offices. They're being given a laptop and a desk somewhere that might be a different desk tomorrow. So it's a little different than working in the old offices that you and I grew up in, where each person had their own individual office. And I do think that's part of what's decreasing this square foot per employee statistic over time.
And then on another topic, Paul, another piece that you had mentioned was the multifamily supply and a downward pressure on rents. Do you have any gut feeling for the amount of decrease? I mean, are we talking like a 5 to 8% decrease, or, you know, are
no,
we going to go into a recession?
What's happening at this point in the cycle is just that rent increases have started to deteriorate, okay? So if people were raising rents, let's say 5%, they may be flat. Like in New York, I believe the statistic, if you give me a minute, I believe was flat year over year. But in a place like San Francisco, new lease pricing was down. Actually, in New York, it was down 1.9% year over year in New York. And in San Fran, it was flat, 0.1% year over year increase. So I'm just looking at data that have been put out. So what you're seeing is that in the cities where the rents were really hot, the supply is beginning to come on, and that supply is beginning to impact the ability to raise rates. Whether it's, you know, in New York where they're actually down, or in San Fran where they're flat, and it's not like your costs are going down either, right? So your real estate taxes are going up. What you're paying your people to manage the building is going up. So your NOI on the building is starting to drop.
Yeah, and as we see this overbuilding takes place, because, Paul, there's a lot of supply that's in the construction pipeline that hasn't hit the market because of delays, et cetera. So even though permitting and lending have tightened up on multifamily supply, there's still enough product in the pipeline that I'd expect there would be some sort of even less green pastures on the horizon for the investment in the multifamily. And we've talked about that on several of the episodes. You've kind of brought it up. So I guess my question is, if you had to look into a crystal ball 2 years from now.
So here's the thing. So there's a lot, the supply, there's a lot of supply still coming in 2017. It begins to trail off in 2018. And then you should see a slowdown in 2019 in supply growth. But a lot's going to depend on what gets permitted over the next 12 months, right, for 2019, because it takes about 2 years to put these buildings up. We're really starting to look for 2019 supply, and that's going to really depend on what the permitting is like over the next 12 months. But theoretically, if permitting continues to slow, you should see a slowdown in new builds coming to market in 2019. But unfortunately, you're going to get all the supply, and then if we get a recession, let's say in late 2018 or 2019, you'll have all the supply on just as your demand rolls over, which is kind of classic in terms of what happens in any sort of commodity-like industry.
Real estate being one of them.
Yeah, real estate being one of them. There are many. I explain to people that computer memory is a commodity business, which people don't understand, but it's basically driven by supply and demand and the amount of memory that the memory producers are producing, because I can take a module from one memory supplier and replace it with another memory supplier. Doesn't make any difference. It's a commodity business, and there's a ton of them. Real estate is a commodity business.
And finally, if I could just sum it up for the listeners, single-family residential, even though we're in a seasonal slowdown period, I know by looking at my own lead flow as we come into October here, I am assuming or I am surmising that we should, even with incremental rate raises, Paul, with the fundamentals that we described here on the call, we should be relatively safe, and we don't expect anything catastrophic, you know, coming into the spring market with single-family residential, right?
Yeah, I don't see anything catastrophic, even if rates go up, you know, because last time I bought a house, I think back in the early 2000s, rates were a lot higher. It didn't seem to stop the housing market, right? So I
You're
suspect
right about that,
that if we look at rates, they could probably, and we've done some computations, but we think they could easily go up 150 to 200 basis points before they start really having an impact on housing, just because of affordability is pretty low here in terms of cost to income. So you really need a significant raise in rates to have a real negative impact on housing. And here's the other thing. If incomes are rising 2 to 4% per year, for every 4% rise in income, it offsets a 50 basis point or 0.5% increase in interest rates. So if over the next 2 years, incomes go up 4% a year, so that would be a total of 8%, rates could go up 1% and it wouldn't impact affordability at all.
And historically, just for anyone who wasn't paying attention to the Fed for the last 20 years, I mean, what type of raises are normal and par for the course when these interest rates go up? Are we talking like a point? Are we talking a quarter point? I mean, I kind of know the answer, but I'm leading into it just for simplicity's sake.
Okay, so there are two separate periods of time with the Fed. There's the periods where they raise rates very slowly and a very gradual rate. So we had a quarter point raise some time ago, and now we're going to get another quarter point raise, and we might not see another raise until next June, let's say. But probably starting sometime later next year, those rate rises will get more frequent, and they may even get higher. So typically, in the periods where the Fed starts to raise rates, what we would call aggressively, they'll start raising rates a quarter point a meeting. And they meet monthly, right? Or they meet every other month. So all of a sudden, rates will start to go up at a pretty rapid rate, and sometimes they'll raise rates 50 basis points. So we're not there yet. But we could be there 9 to 12 months from today where they're going to start raising rates rapidly. Does that answer the question, Dan?
It does. It's spot on. It's perfect. I think it illustrates the point and the risk of the rates coming down the pike.
Yeah, and usually once the Fed gets into those quick rate increases, you can start counting down the days until we have a recession.
I'm sure we'll be talking about that on a future episode, without a doubt. All right, Paul, I believe that's everything I had notated here to ask you on this episode. Do you have any other final thoughts as we close?
No, except we've been telling our clients that the real estate that they are buying today, they should be prepared to, you know, hold through recession, excluding single-family housing, because we think that within the forecast horizon, which for most major real estate transactions would be 5 years, at least to hold if you're buying an office building or a multifamily apartment building, that you have to figure there's going to be a recession sometime in the next 5 years, and so it has to be in your planning horizon. So we're telling our clients, only buy the stuff you want to hold through the next recession. And the other thing we're telling them is we continue to like single family over the long term. We think the demographics are there, and we think the supply-demand characteristics of housing are there. So both those things should be a tailwind to the industry for the next few years. And that would be my final thought for your audience.
Excellent. And Paul, would you like to share some contact information about your company?
Sure. As you know, my company is Green Drake Advisors. We are specialists in wealth management, which includes both financial planning and investment management for our clients. Our goal is to help them secure their future and their children's future and their legacy, including philanthropy and any other types of legacy they may wish to establish. And we look forward to serving them. They can reach us at our offices in Wayne, Pennsylvania at 610-687-7766. And thank you again, Dan.
All right. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate you coming on the show. And until next time, we'll catch up soon.
We'll catch up soon. Glad to be here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Monthly Market Update with Paul Sloat. Have you noticed that you are no longer receiving the weekly episode updates in your email anymore? In order to cut down on the number of emails I am sending out to my buyers list in each market, I've decided that I am only emailing certain episodes to each market. So you may go weeks or months without seeing an REI Diamond Show episode email unless you've signed up to receive email notifications every week at www.reidiamonds.com. You will also receive new episode notifications automatically when you are subscribed through one of the podcast apps, including iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Do you currently have deals for sale, or are you looking for profitable real estate deals to buy? Either way, you can submit deals you'd like to sell, or check out the deals I have for sale in Chicago, Atlanta, Florida, or Philadelphia by going to www.reidiamonds.com and clicking the link at the top of the page. If you are selling a property or would like to present a deal for me to buy, I only ask that you are direct with the seller, as I prefer to oftentimes talk with the actual seller of the property that I'm buying in order to get the full story behind the property. So lastly, if you have certain questions or topics you'd like discussed on a future episode, or if you have a guest suggestion, an expert that you would like me to reach out to and invite on the show, you may contact me directly by clicking the Contact Dan link at www.reidiamonds.com. I do personally check my email and check those form submissions, so that is the best way to contact me. Thanks for listening. Dan Breslin here. I will catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.